she taught me about work-life balance. She went, that's great, but there are three elements to our wheel: work, life, and Helen. I'm fastidious about boundaries. There are times when boundaries need to be moved, but it is my responsibility to make sure that the boundary gets put back.
Welcome to the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity podcast, brought to you by VLM training and coaching specialists across the UK and Australia, hosted by me, Vicky Main. Are you a business owner, leader, or executive? Have you ever felt stuck or disappointed where your life or business is heading? Do you ever feel overwhelmed, compare yourself to others, or feel like you're swimming in treacle at times? This podcast is here to help you get unstuck fast, from viscosity to achieving escape velocity and expanding your knowledge. Our guests on the show will share practical tips and real-life experience about how they got out of negative situations or circumstances to live their best life on their terms. We will be sharing real-life stories from real people doing some incredible things. Stay tuned for our next guest. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 4 of the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity Podcast. I'm your host, Vicky Main, and today we have very special guest, Helen Merchant, on the show. Welcome, Helen. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure. I'm so excited to have you on the show and hear about all of your depth and breadth of experience as a CEO and leader in the global space, and we'll get into all the detail of what you've been doing. Where are you based right now, Helen?
So I'm just north of London, in Hertfordshire. Yes.
Fantastic. So, we have a lot of Aussie listeners online and in the US and in the UK as well, and various other countries. I'm sure they're all excited to hear what you've been up to and all about your experience and share some wisdom and knowledge with us. So let's get straight into it. Can you tell our listeners about your career journey and what you're doing now?
Wow. I'm 53 now. It's been a long career. I struggled when I was at school because I was deaf as a child.
Right.
So lost my hearing through multiple infections, and then only really, so struggled with where do I fit into this society. Went on to college and did international business and finance, thought banking, it's going to be a great career. My mum and dad are going to be super proud, but hated every minute of it. Trained then as a beauty therapist and loved it from day one. It was about helping people, making them feel good about themselves, being a confidant, and absolutely loved it. So worked my way up through to senior therapist, lots of training, lots of education, went into teaching, which I enjoyed, but then went on to regional management, which was fascinating, and looked after 10 locations, which was crazy busy, but good. And then decided the travel bug hit me and went off to Dubai as teaching beauty therapy and cosmetology for the international school there. From there, I went out to Mandarin Oriental to open their first ever resort facility in Macau, which was phenomenal.
Wow.
And that coincided with the handover of Macau from Portugal back to mainland China. So did all of that, did my hotel management training there with Mandarin Oriental. So I have my gold pin, which is still very, very proud of. Came back to the UK, just had a great time, and then worked at a property in Southern Ireland, which was beautiful. And then on to multi-site management again, but on ships. So I worked with P&O, which was phenomenal. Very, very different environment. It was literally running a two-week business every 2 weeks, a new business every 2 weeks. Wow. Demographic changes, different type of people. How do we run a business, a profitable business with that? The logistics, it was a great environment to be in. From there, I went out to, I know it sounds crazy, out to Saudi Arabia, to Riyadh, and opened the first ever female-only hotel and spa.
Wow.
From construction all the way through to opening, which was probably one of my greatest achievements in a very, very difficult society, beautiful society, but challenging to get things done as a woman, but have such an appreciation for the Arabic culture. I loved it. loved it, loved the people, loved the challenges that it faced, that I faced it on a daily basis. Business is still going now, still big friendships, which is wonderful. And then went on to Group Director of Projects and Development for Six Senses, which was based in Bangkok. Opened some fabulous projects for them all over the world, which was exciting. I was seconded into Portugal, where I met my husband 18 years later. We're in the UK, so we have a great life. We're between here and Portugal, which is lovely. Opened my own business, and it was hugely successful as a consultant in the spa space. And then that has grown. And as my knowledge and capacity has grown, went very much into the cosmetology and development base of skincare and cosmetics, and have worked on projects with some fabulous hotel groups and brands across the world. So that's where I am now.
And when I was looking at your LinkedIn, your background, you were also working with Unilever on various projects, which I know you won't be able to go into, but you worked on some really cool projects there. And also you were a CEO of Face Gym, which is...
I
love Face Gym in London. I'm a big fan. And you go there and it's essentially, they give you a facial massage, but they use all these tools and things and basically give your skin a good plump up. And it's a lovely, I love Face Gym. Big fan.
Yeah, there's a whole science behind it. And it's really about muscle lifting and actually exercising the muscles. As you would go to the gym, we exercise the muscles of the face all over that give that instant lifting. And then obviously there's EMS technology that is like stimulating as well, that takes it even further. Inga is just phenomenal. Yeah. And her story is just amazing of how all this came together. And her partner and husband, Mauro Moretti, who was like, yeah, let's bring on board Helen. And he was a phenomenal guy. Tough, but tough in a good way. It was like he got the best out of you, which was amazing. It was my dream job.
Yeah. And I guess throughout all of your experience, that global knowledge and global experience is priceless, because you've seen different, worked with different cultures, different languages. You've worked in that hotel space, that spa space. And I guess working in that space, you must have pretty high standards in terms of, I guess, how do you feel about going to your local spa? Have you been a bit spoiled with all of this life of luxury and working in that space? I bet you have.
Oh, without a doubt. I think that grounding in 5-star hotels, it never leaves you. You have this huge expectation of what's coming and what you're receiving. But at times you have to let that go. You're like, okay, we're not there. It's not how I would do it. However, these are all the positives. So I'm someone who always looks for the positive in every experience. But yeah, it is quite challenging when I go to a spa because I'm looking everywhere. But I just have to go, stop, take myself back into myself and go, let's enjoy the experience of I've got time off. I'm here. I'm present. I'm enjoying this. What a wonderful day I'm having, the company I've got, that I can afford to do this, and how I'm going to feel at the end of it. But I've taken time for myself, which is a huge ask for a lot of execs now. But I now know that if I don't feed Helen her energy, then I can't project that energy out. It is a tough one that you have to stop yourself in that moment and remind yourself of where you are at present and be grateful for the experience that you're going to have.
Yeah. And being a female leader and working at that level, your propensity for strategic thinking is phenomenal, because we've had so many conversations and I know how you cut to the chase and your strategic brain is phenomenal. And I guess being a woman in leadership, what have you seen as the biggest challenges? Is that whole sort of burnout, is that one of them, like that propensity to go into the burnout stage?
Yeah, I think so. When I look over, I'm talking about a 30-year career here. So I've seen and been part of huge change in the female space. And I'm really proud of that. And being on exec boards within the hotel environment, where you may be the only female or one other, normally leisure and housekeeping, that's where you were. And you just, can you make a cup of tea, Helen? Or you go around the table for opinion and then you'd get skipped because, you know, and if that happened into today's society, it would be absolutely shocking. And we would stand up and go, hey. But at the time, we were finding our feet. And I think some of the best learning experiences that I ever had on how not to do it. For me, I don't regret any of those experiences. Those people, those men, taught me so much.
Yes.
So much that they didn't realize that they were teaching me.
So, what are the challenges have you faced with being a female leader? I'm curious.
Things like you have to wear a skirt, you have to wear high heels, your hair has to be perfect, your makeup has to be perfect, not to interject on male conversations. That was a big one. Until you start to grow up, grow into and gain trust, you had to work 10 times harder, definitely. Your knowledge had to be at the pinnacle all the time. You always had to have reference points. You could never present as an idea. You had to come with every fact. You were never going to get anything signed off by, oh, can we do this? So whereas it was a perpetual, there was always that free-flowing trust into the male thinking pattern. And I don't blame anyone, because it's much easier for a man to understand a male thinking pattern than it is necessarily from a complex female thinking. Complex in a really good way, because we think on multiple levels all the time. So it was tough for them to say, well, hang on a minute. But if you go with the facts and the figures, and this was a learning experience, if you go and you have backup and you have evidence, they're like, oh, okay. Well, because they're not following you, they're following the evidence that you're presenting, even though so your idea is hidden underneath it all. But now it's changed a lot. So you go up and you go, hey, hang on a minute, this is where it is. But it's been fun to be that strategic from day one, from 30 years out, when people didn't really understand that you were being strategic about what it is that you were trying to do to get the outcomes that you needed for your element fitting into that business. So changing mindsets, listening to people. But I will say I have had some phenomenal male leaders in the past who have led and not managed. There's a big difference. There's a huge difference between someone who is managing you and someone who is leading you.
Yeah. And I think we'll drill down a bit more into leadership from your perspective. But I know you've had several board advisory roles. And 9 years ago when I moved to Western Australia, and at that time, I hadn't been on boards necessarily, coming from the UK and emigrating over there at the time. I remember going to a talk where a gentleman who's very successful in Perth, and I'm not going to name who this is, very successful company, he was doing a talk and he was talking about his board and the strategic thinking and the benefits of a board, really going into detail. I was curious and I went over and I said, oh, can you tell me more about your board? Because I'd read an article about female representation on boards in Australia at the time. And this was 9 years ago. And I think a lot has changed now, 9 years ago. And I said, how many women did you have on your boards? And he said, one, but she left. And I think he felt really exposed and I didn't want to put him in that situation. But I said, okay, well, in my mind, I said, oh, thanks for that. I was just curious really to find out more. Anyway, I changed the subject because he felt a bit awkward. You could see that in his voice and his mannerisms. But I thought, okay, I need to be the change that I want to see. So I thought, rather than just bitch about it on Twitter or put anything out there, I thought, you know what? I'm actually going to go and get my directorship. So I joined the AICD, which is the Australian Institute of Company Directors. And I did the company director course with a view that I would get myself on a couple of boards, advisory boards, and actually be the change I want to see. Because I thought it's pointless going on about it and saying, oh, one woman on the board. No, I'll just go and get myself a board position and take it from there. So I did. That was 9 years ago. And that led to me then becoming a board chair and thinking more from a board advisory capacity. So it was not for profits, really, that was working in that space. But it gave me a different level of strategic thinking. And I know you've had several board positions and you do that now. And I'm just curious what your perception is. And I have to say, actually, going back on the Australian thing, there's a lot more women on boards now. And I think it is changing rapidly. And especially with the movement around International Women's Day and the promotional opportunities there around disparity and pay and women on boards, I think it's getting better. But going back to yourself, I'm curious about your experience on boards within the UK and beyond and what your experiences have been in that space.
I believe that you need a mixed board. Because we all as individuals bring something very, very different to the table. And I think a lot of senior boards are changing dramatically. And I think for the good, because you need people who are strategic thinkers that can bring experience from other industries or the same industry, the same segment, to support the senior leadership team. You need a very strong chair who can bring experience, coaching, and mentoring mentality to the CEO. And that relationship is built, has very strong foundations, that is a confidant on both sides. This is someone who, as the CEO, sometimes it's very difficult not to be in it, into the detail. And you have to train your mind very quickly to pull yourself out of the daily operations to sit in that strategic role. And as a chairman, that's part of what you do, is like, come on, let's pull you out of the operation and let's get you thinking about what this business is in the future. Because it's a tough job holding up the responsibility as a CEO, without a doubt. There's a big difference between we and I, and we as a team, as a company, achieve this. However, the CEO holds the responsibility as I. The buck stops with you, basically. There is no one else. You have agreed to whatever it is. And that's why you need strong board members that bring something very specific to the board, who can challenge the business, who can challenge the leadership role, not in a dictatorial way or anything like that. This is about, let's get the best out of the business. How can I support you to achieve that? Things like having your remunerations committee, it's phenomenal. You should all have remunerations committees. It should not be an internal process. That the reason why people are being questioned are on a strategy level, they bring something different. It's not emotive. The board is not emotive. It is pure strategy. And that's the difference. I think that you need that unemotional approach sometimes to go, okay, this is where we are. Because being in business and people, and you have a responsibility to people.
Yeah.
And that's a huge part of any CEO role. It's about the people. But the board can keep you really tightly on your strategic line of thinking.
Yeah, sure. It fascinated me, and I loved my opportunities on boards and working in different spaces. So, and it definitely makes you think differently, more strategically, and more of a helicopter view of the business or which, whatever you're involved in. I think that's really good. Go on.
But I would say, sorry, the other word I think that encompasses it is about making sure that your board is collaborative towards you and the senior leadership and the business.
Yeah.
Because collaboration is what will take you forward. It's not about the arguments. Yet, challenges. Let's make it a challenging environment, because challenge makes us stronger. It makes the business stronger. But let's do it in a collaborative way.
Yeah. So speaking of collaboration, and I'm going to segue to conflict as well, because it's an area that I'm really fascinated about, and leadership. And with regard to the roles that you've held, I know you've worked for yourself as an entrepreneur, and you've also worked for companies. Now, over the years, you must have seen a lot of maybe some situations where managers or leaders haven't necessarily made decisions for the best of the team or the business or whatever that is, and also on boards. And I'm just curious, from a conflict perspective, can you talk to me about what your thoughts are around conflict, and give me some examples of how you've seen conflict minimized, or if you think it's a good thing in certain spaces? Or you alluded to it with the boards, and I know I've had some friction on boards, and even in roles I've held, I've been sent in there and they've wheeled me in to go, right, okay, deal with that. And I'm very good at being able to get in and cut to the chase, but yet outside of work I can be lovely and all those things, but in a business capacity I'm not afraid to go toe to toe and have those difficult conversations for the greater good of the company, but also doing the right thing, I think. But tell me a bit more about conflict and what your thoughts are.
Well, I think conflict grows as you grow. So what I saw as conflict in my 20s now is just a conversation. I think that grows as you grow within your career. Your conflict, your vision, your idea of conflict changes, and it changes dramatically. But I think that one of the assets that I have is I never forget my lessons, because I look at them always as lessons of growth. At the time, it was super uncomfortable. But when you look back and go, oh, I understand why I felt uncomfortable, but I wouldn't feel uncomfortable now because it helps to feed into your resilience. And conflict is part of resilience as you grow within your career. And I don't want to sound like conflict is like, yeah, it's easy. It's never easy. And I think it actually becomes harder the more that you grow, because I think we have something that people don't intimate to is about internal conflict. It's the thought of having to have that conversation. It's the thought of that challenge. As a senior leader, I spend so much time thinking that my brain hurts. And people go, really? You're like, yeah, you think a lot because you build scenario based. It's, if I go down this avenue, what are the pitfalls? What are the challenges we're going to face? If I go this way, what is that? And you're putting like 10 or 15 scenarios together that you're going to bring down to 5 or 3 that you're going to present. But you have got to go through the strategic line of the possible outcomes and the pitfalls that could arise, the challenges. Who are the best people to bring into each thought process? So the conflict is tough around conversations with your senior leadership team. How are we going to get this across the board? I think there are multiple things where, so if I go back to my 20s and 30s, and I would say to you, the conflict was always around your line managers, because they were never given the resources or the training or education to manage the next generation. So we think differently, as do millennials and Gen Z that we're working with currently. So I'm always mindful and have internal conflict around challenge different mindsets. So when I was brought up with, and you'll recognize this, I hope, you manage with an iron fist in a velvet glove. That's what we were always taught with. Hang on the table. But I did it with kindness. Not me personally, but it was the impact of that iron fist on the table that you were like, it was fear-led management back then. Whereas we know we can't do that. We had to go from that really serious, hard, brutal leadership into we've been part of that whole softening. And do you know what? We don't always get it right. We don't. Leadership, you can't always get it right. You'll go from swing from one side to the other, which I have been too hard, been too soft. You find your middle ground and then you become strategic.
Yeah.
And tough conversations will always have internal conflict. But I am a true believer that no matter what, we have to lead with honesty, sincerity, kindness, humbleness. And we have an obligation as a leader to land everyone safely, securely as a whole person on the other side of any change or challenge within a business.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one because we have to hold the mirror up to ourselves every single day.
Yeah. And speaking of which, you're very self-aware, and I know you've spent a lot of time working on you and taking some time out for yourself, which I think is really important. And that can build greater self-awareness, empathy, understanding of other people. And I think, talk me through what you've been doing in that space and being able, and I know you've, and congratulations, you've just done a really successful charity swim, which looked amazing, but looks quite, tell me about that as well.
So
your wellness journey.
I was clearly on CEO trajectory when I was with Face Gym. I went in as a CEO, and knowing that whether it was that one company or with the next one, I was going to go into that CEO role. And it was just so sad there because I loved it. I loved the company. I loved Mara and I loved Inga tremendously. But they had brought in a new CEO who didn't want anyone in that was existing. I was sadly surplus to requirements, still love the brand, still love, adore them, and think that their success is recognizable. From there, I went on to work with Unilever's Prestige on one of their brands to launch in the UK onto the more of a global perspective and market, which I was able to do. Loved it. We saw success, different strategies, brought in about the difference between need and want, and by launching a pre-order list and things like that. It was just hugely successful, and I still absolute admiration of Vasiliki's work within Prestige there. She's phenomenal and a real trailblazer in her thinking. And she talks a lot about white space thinking, which is where I sit, is finding the white space and looking for the next opportunity or growth strategy that no one else is doing. And that's the real fun element. And from there, I was asked to go into mainstream Unilever to look at something that was coming out of their innovation pipeline. So that was really exciting, and worked for three and a half years on that. And obviously through the pandemic, where we saw departments closing and being at the heart of something that was tremendous and that I could actually add so much value. But I realized that working with offices in LA, New York, London, Rotterdam, India, Singapore, it takes it out of you. And working at that pace for 3.5 years was exhausting. So I was like, okay, what comes first, my bank account or my wellness? And I chose my wellness and said, I'm going to take a break. The first time ever in my career that I've gone, I come first. Yeah. And I worked with a lady called Leila Elizabeth Risden, and she taught me so much on her female exec training course. And she taught me about the work-life balance. She went, that's great, but actually there are three elements to our wheel. There is work, there is life, and there is Helen. And a massive mind shift here, because I will say this, an absolute workaholic. Everything went into my work because I have so much pride in what I deliver and what I do. And where I've understood is that if I don't feed Helen with everything that Helen needs, I cannot work at 100% capacity in either work or life. And I have really understood that. So I am fastidious about boundaries. I also understand there are times when boundaries need to be moved, but it is my responsibility to make sure that the boundary gets put back. So I started swimming again during the pandemic and then decided, okay, I'm going to set myself a challenge. So did a 2-mile sea swim. I've been training for 6 months. So that happened on Sunday. It got postponed, which I will say, the mental challenge that had, I was like, you mean I've got to get back in the pool and start to continue training? I was like, it was a real mental push. I had to dig really deep. And then I did the swim on Sunday and the currents were really tough. We did an extra kilometer. The organizer said, it's a shorter route if you want to take it. And me being me was like, no, I've signed up to do this with my friends. So we took the hard route, but we came back, we did it. It's still sinking in, but I will say I was broken yesterday. I was on my knees, just tired like I could never have imagined. Yeah. It was so funny because when I was swimming, all I got was this, you've now understood the importance of having solid foundations in a business, because this is, I've done all the training, I've got the foundations, I've got the strength, I've got the resilience, I can do this, I've got this. And when I was looking, going, this is everything that I talk about when I go into a business and we're talking about transformation or change. If we don't have solid foundations and the right people in the right roles, then the business has a weakness.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't have done and committed to that training, then I probably would not have finished. I'd have taken the shorter route, and I didn't. Because I knew I had the strength, the power and the resilience to go through all those tides.
Yeah. As you were talking there, I was smiling because I went through a phase. I love running. And back when I was working and teaching in the northeast of England years ago, every year in September, I would do the Great North Run, which is a half marathon. And I actually did it for 5 or 6 consecutive years. And I remember the week, the Great North Run would always coincide with the induction week with students. Mm-hmm. So I remember having to run the half marathon on the Sunday and then getting up to get on stage, trying to get up on stage and hobble across the stage effectively. And I remember having the talks with students and saying things like, I'm a little bit sore today because I did the Great North Run. Who did the Great North Run in the audience? And a couple of people would put their hands up because it's really popular up there. And I would go on about, you don't get a place in the sun without blisters. And I kept saying this every year and don't know why. And I'd say, you've got to train, talked about discipline, all the things that you've talked about and mindset at the time. Little did I know I was manifesting my place in the sun because I went on 5 years later to emigrate to Australia and live in Australia. And then that led to so many amazing opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I know you talked a bit about your experience overseas. And I think having that knowledge of global experience is so transformational.
Yes.
And that led to me then doing triathlons, which, you know, one dip in the pool one day led to me having a chat with a friend. And then the next thing I know, I was a triathlete just doing all these triathlons. But I think fitness, I know when I've been at my best on top of my game in my career, it's always coincided running in parallel with training. So whether that is running, swimming, kickboxing, I went through a phase of doing that and love kickboxing, all those things. And then it can be things like yoga. I know you like yoga, and some of my greatest ideas have come when I've sat on that yoga mat and done stretching. It's incredible.
Yeah. So I get up at 5:30 in the morning, even on a weekend. And the first thing I do is meditate before I do anything.
Wow.
So I trained myself. And a great friend of mine, a lady called Sunita Passi, we laugh about this because I'm like, I can do 3 minutes, Sunita. And she used to laugh at me. I was like, I'm no good at it. And now I'm quite comfortable at doing 45 minutes. So anywhere between 30 and 45 minutes. And I do a variety of spiritual, real energy, clearing, chakra, manifestation, affirmation. It's whatever I'm led to in the morning. And I just go, okay. And I quick meditate before I've got to go into big meetings, 5 or 10 minutes, clearing my mind of all of the busyness and to focus on what needs to be focused on. I'm a true believer in that. And then I swim between 4 and 6 days a week, depending on how much time I've got. And the minimum that I will do a day is a mile. Wow. That's a minimum. And my maximum distance is around 5K. But again, I keep that up. But in training, I was up to around between 22 and 25K a week.
Wow, and that's incredible.
And I had a couple of coaching lessons because to get the best out of me, out of my stroke. So this again goes back to business. It's like, how can we get the best out of people when we're not giving them the tools to do it? Let's get the best out of people. Let's provide the best working environment to get the best out of people. My personal mantra to myself is every single day, I aim to be better than my best. Bearing in mind that we have a variable day. So some days, if I've got out of bed and I've done my meditation and I've done my swim, I've been better than my best because I actually didn't even want to get out of bed at 5:30 that morning.
But do you not find, and I love that, I love that mindset, but do you not find there are days, and we all have them, do you not find there are days where you go, you know what, I'm going to have a lie in bed and I'm going to have breakfast in bed and I'm going to sit and read the papers. Maybe it's a Sunday morning, Sunday Times, read them in bed and do nothing today because that's what I need. Do you have days like that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm not really a late sleeper. So I've gone from someone who used to survive on 4 hours sleep. And I will say survive, but it actually became a habit. So if I get 6 hours now, I'm like, yeah, I've done really well. My husband is Portuguese. So bless him. And really taught me about this whole coffee culture. You know, it's like, yeah. So for us on those days, it's always we still get up. We always still go out, but we'll go out for a nice cup of coffee. We'll feel the sun on our face and go, yeah, there is so much to be grateful for. And gratitude is a huge part of my life. It's like not everyone at this moment in time are in the position to be able to go out and have a coffee. But what they are able to do is go and have a walk in nature, take a coffee with them or a flask of water or whatever that is, and sit in that moment and go, I'm here and I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
And pat yourself on the back. Because I think that's the other thing. When you get to senior leadership, I'm very mindful sitting in a CEO role that it's something that comes very natural to me to say thank you to people's efforts, even as a senior leadership team that you're directly leading, and to get them to see the gratitude that I have for their work, for their efforts, for their input, for their resilience, for their commitment, their dedication to whatever it is. But when you step into that CEO lead role, not many people say thank you. So it's very important that we reward ourselves and pat ourselves on the back and going, yeah, today was a tough day, but it was a good day. And look what we did. Did you see the smile on that person's face? Did you see the pride when you said thank you to that person? Their whole physique changed because you called them out on their good work. Take those moments and live those moments with them, because they are moments that those people will take with them in the future. And always remember that our leadership journey is tiny. So the impact and the legacy that we leave is so important, because we're building the next leadership teams that are coming along, and we can either do it well or we don't. Yeah. I choose to do it in the best way that I can. That legacy, we pay that legacy forward.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it reminded me of when I was coaching several business owners in Australia on a project, and I used to ask them the question, when was the last time you celebrated a win? And it doesn't have to be a huge win, but just even a small win. I remember one lady said to me, I'm going out today and I'm having a coffee and I'm just going to enjoy the moment. And I love that. And I think it's taken moments like that of celebrating those small incremental wins, which is really important as well. And whatever that is, for me, it would be because I'm really into my health and wellness now. And I'm really starting to see the benefits of not only exercise, but the whole mindset piece of the benefits. And we'll talk about mindset in a moment, but also about eating the right foods to fuel your body. It's not rocket science, but it's like, do I choose that pizza today? Or do I choose that really nourishing, beautiful salad that actually is going to fuel my body and help me? Maybe it's a 40s thing for me, but I'm mindful about what I'm eating now, because everything I put in my mouth, it's a choice. And it's going, well, do I need to eat chips or do I have that healthy? And I'm really into beetroot and goat's cheese salads at the moment. I love it. And I could eat that all day. And I think it's being more mindful about actually treating yourself better. You know,
I have been overweight my entire life. So it's a battle that I get, but I have had a shift in mindset is that, do you know something? I can be the healthiest that I can be. And if I can make those choices, sometimes it's like, do you know what? Let's have a slice of that pizza. And I'm not going to beat myself up about it. But it's about saying to yourself, I am making positive choices to have a healthy lifestyle, a healthy life, a healthy body. And that's what I do. I've had to bulk a little bit because of the training, but now it's like, whew, that's my next goal. It's like, yep, I'm going to drop that back down. But do you know, above all, I'm super happy, and we will never stop judgment in life ever. And if people want to judge, well, that's okay, but judge the whole picture, not just part of it.
Yeah.
Health, it is important to have a healthy lifestyle. Shouldn't be obsessive, but just be healthy.
Yeah. And I think it's that balance. And I've had personal trainers over the years, and my trainer would say to me when I lived in Oz, it would be, you can't out-train a bad diet. And I'd say, well, I come to the gym 5 times a week and kill it in the gym because I want to be able to go out and eat what I want. But there's a certain level that you literally can't train and out-train a bad diet. So you have to eat for your training and things. But I've found, for me personally, since I had children, I was always very skinny when I was younger. Mm. And then as soon as I had kids, it was like, boom, curves. Mm. Hello, curves. And now in my 40s, I embrace it. And I go, yeah, I could lose 10 kilos. I could, but it's a gradual thing. It's not right, let's go on an extreme diet. It's actually a lifestyle choice, and it changes. And I'm really excited. I'm joining a new gym and I'm really excited to start my weight training again. I love weight training.
Congratulations. So good for women. I would say menopause changes your body like crazy. And you're like, oh my God. But again, I'm 53 years old. And I'm living my best life, you know, and these challenges come along. But again, within business, we have to be mindful of this. We have to be mindful. These are massive changes for women and for men. We change as we get older. And it's important that we embrace those changes. Really, it really is important.
I know for me, I stopped reading mainstream magazines, like female magazines, because I found, and I could feel this, as soon as I'd read it, a magazine, I would look at all these beautiful models and in my mind, and often I would read the magazine, I'd sit down, read the magazine with maybe a chocolate bar and a cup of coffee, and I'd sit and go, oh, this is a real treat to myself. But it was a bit of an oxymoron, because I'd sit there and then I'd feel really crap because I'd read the magazine, saw all these beautiful women, then I would eat this chocolate bar. And actually, when I had my second child, someone tagged me in a picture in Facebook, and I was still breastfeeding at the time. So I looked like quite heavy on top. I was quite big and I felt shame. And I remember I started Slimming World. And to be fair, I stuck to it, the plan, and I did lose like 4 stone. It was quite extreme, bearing in mind that I had a big baby, like nearly a 10-pound baby. But I remember that feeling of shame, and I just didn't want to feel that way. So I made changes immediately. But then gradually over time, you put a little bit of weight on and things. But I think people shouldn't judge a book by its cover. Like, whatever your weight is or whatever you're going through, it's about being happy inside. And there are a lot of really thin people who maybe eat a lot of food, but they just can't put weight on, who are desperately unhappy too. And I think it's accepting ourselves and our uniqueness and embracing who we are, and not telling ourselves and having this feeling like we need to be a size 8 model. Because let's face it, I'm never going to be a size 8 model. I'm like 44 now. I'm never going to happen. However, what I would want to be known for is my brain and my propensity to be really kind to people and inspire people. Yeah. But I don't want to be known for walking down the catwalks, because that's not my journey. And actually, absolutely, I'm not, I wouldn't want to eat so little that I would feel, because that's what I'd have to do to get to that size. Mm-hmm. Really.
No, I mean, I get it. It's so funny. I can talk about this and go, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to start swimming. I've got to get into a swimsuit and I can't hide anywhere. And it's amazing. In our swimming community, it's like, Helen, you often walk through the streets, go, oh my God, Helen, I didn't recognize you with your clothes on. And it's hilarious because it's so true. We don't actually recognize our fellow swimmers with our clothes on. Yeah. And you're like, it strips away anything. And you go, yeah, okay. It's like, we're really not here to judge anyone's bodies or anything like that. We're actually here to swim it out and be like the best that we can be in the pool. And I think that, do you know something? We're all different. We all have different shapes and sizes. But if we can see the good, the kindness in everyone, well, then that's sets us up for a better world and a better society. It takes a long time to understand and be so comfortable in your space.
Yeah.
And my space, my body, my energy, the people I choose to put around me.
Yeah.
And go, do you know what? I'm living my best life.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this life. I don't know. I think it's like self-love has to come before loving outside. You have to love yourself before you can love externally. And when you get it, it's like, oh yeah. Because I can sit here and say, I'm kind, I'm sincere, I'm humble. I'd do anything for anyone if I have the means and the capacity to do that.
Yeah.
If I leave this earth plane tomorrow, if people say to me, the one thing, Helen was so kind, then I've done my job. I've done a really good job.
Yeah. And kindness isn't, and I think that's lovely what you said, kindness isn't a weakness. It's actually a strength.
It really
but the
is.
Thing is, I know, being a woman in leadership that you are, a strong woman in leadership, people shouldn't take your kindness as weakness, because that's a dangerous place to be. And likewise for me, I have had to put strong boundaries in place.
Yes.
I talk about it in my book, which I'm going to do a little shameless plug, the Momentum Mindset book, which I know you've read, and with Jonathan Nye, who wrote the book.
Yeah, but all my notes, look.
Oh, bless you. Well, I do have a copy like that, but I'm using that as my resource. One of the things I talk about in the book heavily, and you'll know this, is one of the biggest chapters is around boundaries, because I had to put them in place. And I've been burnt a few times. I've made mistakes occasionally. Well, I say occasionally. I'm grumpy on a morning sometimes when I haven't had my coffee, and I can be grumpy if I haven't had food. Now and again, like if I'm hungry, I get hungry. And I'm mindful of that. And if I'm get really tired, I need to take myself off to bed, but I'm human. I'm a human being. I'm not a human doing. But I've wrote a book with Jonathan around mindset. And I think having the self-awareness to be able to go, right, how do you want to show up every day? How your mindset is key to be able to help you navigate through the challenges in life. And I'm curious, first of all, Helen, I know you've read the book, and thank you for coming to the London Vision launch. It was lovely to see you there. You're a great champion of women and supporters of what I've done. What was your favourite part of the book? And what do you think about momentum mindset generally?
So there are several reminders for me. And I think that bearing in mind, I'm a long way into my leadership. There have been so many. But I think that I love when we look at don't scare, prepare, and you're preparing the team. Loved that part. And it's not about the summit that you talk about. To the team, their summit is different. Do you see what I mean? Within a business. Yeah. So my summit is very different to people who are feeding into level one. And our summit might be level five. So the summit is very different to every single person within that team. We go, and not everyone are blue sky thinkers or big picture thinkers. So their summits are very small. My summit is huge because that's what I'm paid to do. To have that big summit, to have that multiple summits running at the same time. So it's making sure that we understand everyone's summits, not our own, and being mindful of that.
It's also accepting the fact that everybody, regardless of where they are on their summit level, everybody has something to bring to the table. And I had a wonderful chat the other day with someone who said, as a leader, they learn so much from the people in their team, regardless of the level. It's important. And thank you for your feedback. Back on the book, and I'm pleased it's been a gentle reminder for you of it's been a journey for me. And again, when I wrote the book with Jonathan, even though I scoped it out and mapped it out in Australia, and it's taken a year and a half to get it to the level of where it is now and published and everything, there was moments as I was writing it and thinking, who's going to read this? And actually I had to stop myself and go, hang on, I'm spiraling into this writer's block scenario. And I'm starting to tell myself things that actually I need to stop saying this to myself, because we're our worst critics. So I had to stop, put the brakes on that mindset of thinking negatively and go, right, let's think positively. And I look at the experience of the clients I've worked with, hundreds of clients, in fact, and I go, right, and teaching and having that self-awareness. And I think, you know what? Everybody, including myself, has a story to share. And I think that's so important that we get it out there.
So you talk about gratitude on page 200. Now, you can see that gratitude is something that is ingrained into me. But I think what I wrote here is in my footnotes were, allow gratitude into everything that we do. And that's the people. And there was one other point on page 153, and it's keeping the messaging simple. Simplify your process so that it does not become overwhelming. Strategic thinking is not for everyone. It is something that we learn along the way, and not everyone will ever get it. But as a strategic thinker, we are given the gift of simplicity. Always remind ourselves to simplify the message. Those were my lots of takeouts. But obviously, I think for me, one thing that I live by every day is the gratitude for being here.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Helen.
Pleasure. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been lovely chatting with you. Have you got any final remarks for anybody who maybe is going through some challenges at the moment, whether it's work or their personal life, and they're looking for some advice, or is anything else you would say to help them get unstuck?
I would take the moment and go, this is my moment here and now, and breathe, breathe, and breathe again, and be strategic in your thinking. But if you don't take the time to feed yourself in that moment, in that breathing, you aren't giving the situation, any situation, personal, business, whatever, friendships, you're not giving it the time that it needs for you to see the big picture. So take yourself out into nature, feel the sun on your skin, feel the rain on your hair, feel the grass beneath your feet, whatever that looks like, breathing the sea air if you're close to the sea, and breathe. Think it through. Take the moment. And remember that moment, be grateful for that moment, and train your brain to go, stop. Stop and breathe. And it's amazing what will come to you in that moment.
That's so wonderful advice. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Helen, for everything. Where can people find you online?
I'm on LinkedIn, Helen Merchant. Let's spread the love. I'm blessed. And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share who I am and my beliefs. They don't resonate with everyone, but if it helps one person, then we've done a great job, Vicky. And wonderful. Love what you're doing, and love you as a dear friend, but also with everything that you bring to the table.